Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves. We just finished out of Phoenix, Arizona. Speak your mind. We come into Vegas now with the Ringside Sports with a Punch podcast hosted by a friend, a brother, and a mentor, Mel Velasquez, yours truly. Mark Mancini here playing a little co-host, producing, 347-205-9631. You can catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, let me lay the red carpet, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, minus the slaps from the Oscar. Mel, first of all, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? Third, great guest again, the second time, bringing him back, Pete Turkovich, and this is going to be a great one, my friend.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking to hearing more about Pete, and we're going to talk a little bit more about his time on the West Coast and what comes after, you know, playing with a championship high school team. But before we get to that, the first thing I must do, I don't want to mess up, happy birthday to my beautiful wife, Evelyn. She's wonderful. And it's her birthday, so we had a nice day. My son showed up with a pineapple cheesecake from the Cheesecake Factory. So that was kind of nice, nice surprise. Anyway, happy birthday, babe. I love you. And, you know, we've just had a great, great run. And we're going to continue to. And then before we bring on Pete, though, I always do my, like, 3 to 4 minute spiel. And tonight I'm going to be talking about coaching and what makes a good coach. So, first of all, I'd like to recognize my first couple coaches growing up playing Little League and Babe Ruth ball, you know, early on. And at first, I'm starting with Pete's dad, Mr. Turkovich. What a guy, nice guy. And he knew what he was doing, too. And he was kind, but I'll tell you, because all these guys were like – about the same in their way, except for maybe Mr. Weissnor. He was funny. Mr. Turkovich, Mr. Velasquez, Mr. Stoddard, Mr. Hernandez, Mr. Santiago, Mr. Philpott, and Mr. Weissnor. Weissnor was a character, and he told it like it was. He was a butcher, and he had to work late one day. And they had me out in right field. And I was and Pete, you know I played infield. I played short and mostly. And he stopped the game from the parking lot and he yelled at the assistant coach, "What are you doing?" He said, "Man, I'll get the hell in here and get over to shortstop." And he sent the guy out to right field. And he told the guy, "Don't ever do that again." But that was Weissnor. He didn't play around. But these guys, they had a similar, you know, some similar virtue and value. They all were firm. They were fair, and they were knowledgeable. I mean, we got good training. These guys knew the game, but they were firm, fair, knowledgeable, and they gave every kid a chance. They didn't, you know, they weren't just homers with their own kids, you know. So, and if we didn't deserve it, we sat too, you know. We ran laps. We did whatever. So, anyway, those are my first coaches. So they were excellent coaches of youth sports because, as I said, they were firm, fair, knowledgeable. Three criteria that I would begin to list with any coaches. But in addition to that, I would also add the ability to assess talent and build a team. However, I believe the most important ingredient to being a good coach is having the courage of conviction. You know, saying what you thought and sticking to it. Because every real player wants to play at all times and thinks they are better than the player they're competing with. And they may be, but the coach is going to see it the way the coach sees it. So, you know, they are competing with the coach, yet the coach has to make some tough, tough decisions. So they have to have courage of their convictions. If they're wishy-washy, they're going to lose the team. So let me tell you a story about my own experience. When I was 9 years old, near the end of summer, I moved into a new neighborhood across the street from our high school. You know, and Little League season had just ended, but many of us kids still wanted to play baseball before football and basketball really set into, you know. So I noticed that some of the kids, mostly about 11 to 12 years old, would gather together in the morning to play baseball on the huge asphalt parking lot in front of the high school gymnasium. So I showed up and looked around, noticed that I was the youngest and the smallest kid out there. And most of the kids didn't know me because I just moved into the neighborhood. Consequently, when teams were picked for the first 3 days, I was picked last or next to last. However, lo and behold, on the fourth day, I was picked second. Plus, I was told I would lead off, and I was also told that I'd play shortstop, and the guy that picked me had moved himself from third base to from shortstop to third base and put me there. So I was shocked. You know, I was shocked with the whole thing, but I was also extremely happy. I was elated. You know, however, three of the older kids confronted this 12-year-old face-to-face and asked him, what are you doing, and why did you pick him second? And answering the question, why, he calmly, firmly, and candidly said, but in a non-confrontational manner, with a slight lisp, he said, because he's better than you. And he didn't stare them down. He didn't laugh. He just said that. And then when I heard him, I just stayed quiet, you know. What he did was simply answer them with the courage of his convictions. Note, I didn't let him down. I let off a game with a triple sliding into third base on asphalt. You know, that's how we played. We played hard. And he batted second. I batted off. I let off with that triple. He was batting second. He hit a long fly to left. I tagged up and scored. And he was first one at home to congratulate me. You see, this 12-year-old kid named Greg was none other than Greg Pops Popovich, you know, the winningest coach in the NBA history. So what I noticed was he was a coach even back then. You know, he was destined to be a coach. He just had it in him. And the style you see him, very frank, very firm, he's still the same way. So, all right. So anyway, that's what it takes to be a coach. You gotta believe in what you see. You gotta be able to assess talent, bring a team together, and then stick to your guns. So how's that sound, Pete?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay, so let me introduce you first. First of all, you can get a hold of me, you know, you can get to my book, just go to Mal Velasquez, Intangibles, if you wanna read about the mental side of the game. If you wanna kick something out to me, you can go to the intangibles book at gmail.com. You can kick me out an email. All right, we're ready for Pete. Last week, this is part two. Last week we had Pete Turkovich on, and he told us about his experience in Hoosier Hysteria. He is the only person to play in the famed, you know, Hoosier Hysteria tournament, the Indiana High School Athletic Association State Tournament. And back then, they took all comers. They didn't have Division A, Division B, or A1, A2, A3. They just had all state schools just go for it. And, you know, you had the famed Milan that the movie was made after that won the championship with a high school of only 400 students. So, you know, it was possible. But the team that Pete played on had a little more talent. As a matter of fact, they had a lot more talent and ended up being ranked by Max Prep as the eighth greatest high school team of all time. So Pete played in Hoosier Hysteria. He came back in 2007, and he coached EC Central. The two high schools were combined, and he coached that team, and he won as a coach the Indiana State basketball tournament. So he's the only person in history to win it as a player and as a coach. But after high school, you know, he had a phenomenal record. To me, he can score from any place on the court, you know. And the whole team was incredible. What did the average speed? 92 points a game with no three-point line. That was before the three-point line. So you can imagine how fast these guys were just to get up and down and score that many points. But after he graduated, he was highly touted, and he was recruited, you know, by the best. So why don't we start there, Pete? Why don't you tell us, you know, after, you know, graduation, you played in the All-Star game, you did everything you could in high school. Who started recruiting you? Who started, you know, coming around and saying, Pete, we'd like you to come to our program?
Well, you know, the first program that really showed a lot, first major program that showed a lot of interest was Kansas. Kansas was the first one that was on to me. And then after, you know, it seemed like after UCLA started recruiting me that everybody wanted me because, you know, back then, don't forget, we didn't have, you know, a lot of film. Coaches had to come and watch kids play in person. There was no AAU where you could see, you know, a couple hundred kids in one day. So it was a different time. You went by word of mouth, and if somebody from the Midwest, like John Barato, told John Wooden, hey, you know, I think that, you know, you should come see this kid play. I think you might be able to use him. He sent Danny Crum out to watch me play. And then, you know, again, every, you know, it seemed like the whole country, you know, offered me a scholarship at that point. But I narrowed it down to Kansas, North Carolina State, Notre Dame, and UCLA. And I wanted to go to Notre Dame because, you know, they were, you know, an hour and 15 minutes from the house. I'm a Catholic boy, Catholic school. Just my family could see me play. And I was probably going to sign there, but on my official visit, right before I got there, Johnny D resigned, the coach that was recruiting me. And the new coach was Digger Phelps, and Digger Phelps didn't want me. So I went with my second choice, which was UCLA.
Wow. Yeah. I was hoping to go to Notre Dame. You know, that's what I was pulling for, being a good Catholic guy too. But not only for that, you know, it's close enough. If we want to go see you, we can get down there, and you know, it would have been great. That the other school that intrigued me was LSU, you know, because they had a Pistol Pete there before you, and you were a great ball handler. You can shoot lights out.
Yeah.
So what happened with that?
Well, you know, Press Maravich recruited me heavily also, and he told me that he would treat me like his son, and that he would, you know, get a bunch of guys that would play defense or rebound around me and give me the ball and let me create. And, he was really into it, and I entertained the thought just for a second because, you know, obviously everybody idolized, you know, Pete Maravich at that time. And, you know, I just thought to myself, even at, 17 years old, and, you know, I was very cocky, you know, a cocky kid like most good players are at that age.
You were confident and cocky, I tell you.
I could go in there and maybe average 25 points a game, and I would still get booed, you know, because, you know, they would be expecting – I the local papers started calling me Pistol Pete and all that, but I always knew that I wasn't the real Pistol, and, you know, nobody could fill that guy's shoes, and, you know, I just didn't think that I should do that, and so I turned him down, and he's very upset about that. And then the next year, he had gotten fired, and I bumped into somebody that was helping recruit for him, and I said, "Hey, what would have happened to me if I'd have went there?" And then Press gets fired, and he said, "Well, Press thinks that he got fired because you didn't come. He feels that if you'd have came, he could have kept his job." So, you know, I wanted to try to fill those shoes.
Wow, that's some pressure, I tell you. So, you know, you're looking at Kansas, you're looking at Notre Dame, even LSU, and you end up at UCLA. What was that first year like?
Well, you know, we were in the last class that couldn't play varsity basketball, so we were just playing on the freshman team, and the year after that, then freshmen could play varsity. So, you know, it was kind of back then they used that as a kid's way to get adjusted to college life, and, you know, to feel if this is the right place for him and everything. So it was kind of hard, you know, difficult going from, you know, winning the state championship in high school, your lifelong dream, to going and really playing in a season that there was no tournament at the end. And, you know, of course it was exciting because our varsity team was in the process of going undefeated and starting the 88-game winning streak record. So, you know, that was a pretty exciting thing. But the freshman year was, you know, just a, you know, one of those years just to acclimate yourself to college life.
Yeah, wow. So Mark, he's over at UCLA. What do you think of that?
Well, I'll tell you, we've got a lot of comments coming in. And Barry from Modesto, California says, "Hi, Pete, heard the show last week, was wondering, your practices, were they tough, or did John just let the talent take over, knowing when the game start, you know what time it was?"
You know, that was the, you know, any great coach will know that you do your work at practice. Coach, he had everything down to a science by the time I got there. Practices, you went from one, say, physically demanding drill to a less physically but more of a mentally challenging drill to let your body rest, and then you went back at it again. It was just amazing how organized his practices were, how you know, physically tough. You know, he always had the philosophy that we were going to be in better condition than any of our opponents. And to be honest with you, I thought that for 30 years till I read in the book, wasn't sure we were in the best condition as it, but he wanted us to feel that we were. So he was covering all bases with you. Practices, especially the first couple weeks, you better come ready. You better not, you know, not touch a ball a year long and expect to make it through a practice, because the first one to get over your soreness is the one that's going to excel at your position, and you're trying to fight for time because Coach Wooden didn't play too many guys. So you needed to be in that rotation. But I know a lot of guys, some guys, they talk about Coach Wooden's practices as, you know, they just hated it or whatever. I love practice. I look forward to going to practice every day, and I know a bunch of us guys did too, because the competition was just so off the charts at that time. We had guys that were All-Americans in high school, couldn't get off the bench there.
Yeah, Todd from Modesto, California, I'll throw this comment. You can throw your 2 cents on it, then I'll let Mel finish up with another topic. But last night in San Francisco, Gabe Kapler, the Giants, broke an unwritten rule, bunting up 11-2 against the Padres. There's been some comments on that. Will Clark made a comment. Now he has to live with it going forward. Did you ever see that, you know, with some of the games where you had a team maybe down 25-30 and just never took the starters out? Or John, it seemed like, you know, John Wooden was the type of guy, he wouldn't pile it on. You know, he was very genuine and caring. Anything that this comment coming out of Modesto is that you might have saw in college playing for John Wooden?
No, you know, one of the things that is a very, how could I put it, it's a very tough line to walk, is that we were so good, and some of the teams we played maybe weren't that good. And if you played against a team that you were so much better than and you took a bigger lead, the guys that were not like the star players like the Bill Waltons or the Jamal Wilkes, they were going to stay in the game because Coach wanted them to get, you know, in the reps, and that's who the guy was. So the other guys would get minutes that normally wouldn't get as many minutes. And the thing with Coach Wooden was he never took out Bill or Jamal, well, especially Bill because of his knees. Bill never came out of a game until he was done for the day. So when Bill came out of the game, in fact, I don't know if people remember this, we used to have our bench on the opposite side of where we left for the locker rooms. So Bill would come out of the game and just go straight down the bench and end up going underneath the bleachers down the corridor to the locker room to ice his knees. He never even stayed on the court for the end of the game. But when he put the other guys in, you know, you don't have these guys that are really good basketball players that are working so hard in practice, and then you put them in at the end of the game and you tell them, okay, don't pour it on them. You know, these guys are trying to earn playing time. So when they're going in, as a coach, and Coach Wooden as a coach would never sell his kid and put him in the game and then not coach them. So, you know, that's in line where maybe somebody thinks, well, coach could have taken it easy, but you know, you gotta, it's real, you know, if you can't compete with us, you shouldn't be there, I guess.
Right. So Pete, tell us about, because I followed you, you know, back then. I mean, we were playing high school baseball 2 years before that, and you know, so I kept track of the 70. I came out in 70, and 71 is when you guys, you know, just demolished everybody. And then you went and played as a freshman, and you had some outstanding games. I think you had one game where you were going to break the freshman record. What happened in that game?
I had an outstanding game, or I thought I did, and then they took me out with like 9 minutes to go in the game, and the fans started booing. You know, it was first come first serve for the student section, so they would line up around the Pauley Pavilion, and when they opened the doors, it was just crazy because all the students just run down the stairs and dive over their bleachers and get the best seats they could get. And so we played in front of packed houses at home, you know, and you know, they started booing, and I thought, man, I thought I had a decent game. And then Andre McCarter started saying, hey man, they're not booing you, they're booing that they took you out. You know, he said, you know, you need 5 points to break the school record. So I said, you got to be kidding me. He said, no. So he went down and told the coach, hey, you aware of this? And coach told him, go down and sit at the end of the bench. And then I just thought coach would wait till about 5 minutes to go put me back in, let me break the record, you know, get a standing ovation and leave, you know. Then 5 minutes came, I looked down there, nobody called me. Then 4 minutes, I said, give me four, and nobody called me. Then three, and then I started thinking, man, this guy must think I can score at will if he's going to just put me in at 2 minutes. But he never put me back in. And then they told me, see, because we were, and this goes back to that other story, being up 11-2 and bunting. They took me on the side, and they said to me, Pete, if the game was close, we would have let you break the record, but we don't break records at UCLA just to break records. So that's why, you know, you weren't in. But I was, again, I was a cocky kid. I thought I would break it the next night anyway. So I didn't think nothing of it. But a side thing, Mel, this is for you. Remember Wayne Williams, the star of our team when you were a junior? Wayne Williams?
Oh, yeah. I remember.
Yeah,
Wayne,
well, Wayne,
sure.
Wayne played on Iowa State's varsity team, and our varsity played against Iowa State that year. So Wayne was in the stands and saw me do that 47 points.
Wow, yeah. Oh, he had a modest 47. Jeez, I tell you, you can shoot lights out.
Well,
well,
I got to tell you the better thing. I only played 32 minutes that day, right? Got 33 shots. I got 33 shots up, so I got over a shot a minute. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, you can't play your freshman year. Could you guys dunk yet? Was Duncan in yet?
No. Duncan was outlawed after Lou Alcindor's sophomore year. They say that Adolph Rupp in Kentucky had a lot to do with that. So, no, we couldn't dunk in high school or college. None of my high school or college days was.
Imagine if you could have dunked and had a three-point line in high school. You guys averaged 92 points. It would probably average 110. I mean, geez,
it was
phenomenal.
Actually, I think we averaged 95.
95, my goodness. You guys were lightning, you know. Everybody can get up and down the court on that team. Even Big Timmy could move back then. He was fast.
Oh yeah.
You transition. You're a freshman. You're a star on the team. I think you led the team in scoring, and then you go to the varsity team, and it seemed like your game changed. Was that you, or was that the coaching, or what happened? Because you became a great defensive player, but I always knew Pete as Pistol Pete. So what happened?
Well, you know, two things. First, the offensive part of it was, you know, if I was going into a school for my own accolades or, you know, getting my own shots, I went to the wrong school. And, you know, you got to look at it this way. Ask yourself, Mel, would you rather have me shooting the ball or Bill Walton? Of course, you'd say Bill Walton.
No.
And me or Jamal Wilkes? All right, those two guys were a year ahead of me. playing with me came in Dave Myers, an All-American. So obviously you'd rather have Dave. Behind me came Marcus Johnson and Richard Washington. You know, I was a pretty good player, but these guys were better scorers than me. And, you know, you have to come to the realization where you belong on the food chain. And I was where I belong. And so a lot of people blamed Wooden, said, well, he didn't let him do his, you know, play his game and all that. Well, you know, Coach Wooden was there not to let Pete do his thing. Coach Wooden was there to win national championships, which he did quite, you know, he did quite well. As far as the defense
right.
thing is concerned, you know, always played defense. I played defense in high school. I always say there's like three things you need to be a great defender. And one is the God-given physical ability. And me with my length and my quickness, you know, was no-brainer. Then you have to have the knowledge. Well, Coach Wooden gave me what to do and how to do it right. And then you have to have the desire. Well, I brought the desire myself, you know. So you got those three things, you're going to be a really good defensive player. And I'm so proud that Coach Wooden has said numerous times that the best defensive backcourt he's ever coached has been Pete Turgovich and Andre McCarter. Now, think about that. Coach Wooden
Whoa.
Said the best defense backcourt he's ever coached. So I'm really proud of when he says that.
Wow. That says a whole lot. I didn't know that. Wow. So we got another one, Mark, or how are we looking? I can keep going.
Yeah, we're looking good. And, you know, the thing is, I mean, they just keep coming, trying to stay on top of these things. Somebody out of Austin, Texas, I know it doesn't pertain to what we're talking about. Any thoughts on Dwayne Haskins Jr.? Lost his life this past weekend at 24.
Oh, geez. That's unfortunate. A lot of things are going on right now that are kind of strange. How are you holding up, Pete? How are things back home with the family? You should see Pete's grandkids. He's got a team there, you know, and they're beautiful kids. How many do you have, Pete?
Well, here's how my day went real quick. I went over to watch my 15-month-old because my daughter-in-law and son took my 3-year-old out to lunch after school. She gets a half a day. Then when they came home, I put the little one down, so I got to play with the 3-year-old for a couple hours. Then when the two older ones, the 4-year-old and the 6-year-old, came home from school, I couldn't leave because, you know, when I got ready to leave, the 4-year-old said, but Grandpa, you haven't played with us yet. So that was my day today.
Oh,
I got to be the luckiest guy in the world.
Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah, and I've seen pictures of your kids. I mean, your grandkids, they're beautiful, I'm telling
you. My in-law is finishing up his residency at the University of North Carolina, and he's got him and my daughter have my grandson. He's 4 years old, named Ashton. I'm going out to see him on Tuesday. I'm going to spend a week with him.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, you remind me of your dad. He had the same kind of heart. Hey, you know what? Because the time goes fast here. Can you just briefly tell us about that last day playing in John Wooden's last two games, you know, of his career, and you walk out a champion? Can you just tell us briefly about that day?
You're talking about the last two games, right? The semi-state, the
right,
semifinals,
the last two
and the
games.
Finals. Well,
right.
The semifinals, we play in Louisville with Junior Bridgman, my teammate from high school, Danny Crum, the guy that recruited both of us, you know, me for UCLA, him for Louisville. I had to guard him. He didn't guard me, but I guarded him, and we beat them in overtime. And, I mean, a lot of people from East Chicago were hoping that they would beat us because – and I understand. I knew it wasn't personal. I had won a national title in 73. Tim Stoddard won a national title in 74, and they won a junior win title in 75. It would have been a great story. But, you know, I wanted another ring, too. So we had beat them in overtime.
Play.
And then we got a chance to play Kentucky, and everybody said we wouldn't beat Kentucky because Coach Wooden only played 6 guys, and they were too big and strong for us. And, you know, we played 6 guys. 4 of us played 40 minutes. Dave Myers, Andre McCarter, myself, and Richard Washington all played 40 minutes. Marcus Johnson and Ralph Jones just split the other 40. And we beat them handily. And to tell you the truth, we know. Yeah, playing Louisville – that back then was like playing ourselves. They had our coach, you know, they had our talent, they had our athleticism. We really, in our hearts, feel that they would have beaten Kentucky, which would have been huge. Back then, Kentucky refused to play Louisville because it was like they were like the stepson, you know. They had nothing to gain. They were supposed to beat Louisville, and they wouldn't even schedule them. This would have been the first time they had met, and it would have been for a national. The state of Kentucky would have been awesome. Just incredible. It had that happen, but you know what? We had to send Coach Wooden out a winner, so you know it's all history now.
God, yeah, that was great.
Hey, Pete, how can anybody get a hold of you?
Well, you know, I'm on Facebook, and that's the best way. Send me a message on Messenger and stuff like that if they really want to get a hold of me. I always reply.
Okay, and Mel, as we wind this thing down, how can people get a hold of you?
Same thing. Just go to book Mel Velasquez, The Intangibles, or go to intangibles book at gmail.com. Just write to me.
Okay, for Pete Turkovich, Mel Velasquez, yours truly, Mark Mancini, saying, if you missed it, catch the archive on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, with another great guest. Till then, have a blessed one, and thanks for tuning in.